Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
What's your favorite book or series that does the coming of age trope?
I mean, put me on the spot. I would say maybe Red Rising. My oldest had no real interest in Dune until he found out like how much I love it. And then one day he was just like, do you think I'd like the movie? I was like, I'm not really sure. He's like, well, can I try it? Because I want to see why it matters to you. And I was like, oh, that could make me cry a little bit, you know? 1 year before Fellowship of the Ring came out, the Dungeons and Dragons movie came out. And it was pure dog shit.
Well,
and it completely
happened.
Made me be like, they'll never figure out fantasy genre. Lord of the Rings is going to be terrible. I was in the theater, and it wasn't until Gandalf's fighting the Balrog where I was like, oh my God, they did it. You know, it wasn't that long. I was still that long in the movie, apprehensive about, okay, when's the other shoe going to drop? When's this going to turn to dog shit? Like they always do.
Wow.
So, yeah. I got to tell you guys, I did not think we'd be talking about this much about Sarah J. Maas tonight. You guys are expanding my horizon.
That's why you came on the channel, right?
Welcome everyone to a Tudor Ramble podcast episode. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
And today we have a special guest. For me, this is probably one of the better guests we've had on for one particular reason. A fellow Name of the Wind hater, Mike's Book Reviews, is coming on our show.
And a fellow Red Rising lover, Mike's Book Reviews. You're going to please us both. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, thanks for the invite. And I've been called worse, you know, today. So that's a good start. It's a good start.
Oh, actually, that is one of the reasons why I watch your videos for my book recommendations. If I'm looking for something to read, I basically have two channels, you and Matt's Fantasy Reviews. One of the chief reasons is I saw your, when I finished reading Name of the Wind, I thought I was weird that everyone else seemed to love this book. And I kept looking online forums going like, it's the best book ever. It's great. And I'm going through and going, am I the crazy one?
Yeah.
And I came across your review of it and I was like, I'm not alone.
There's two crazy ones.
It's great.
There are dozens of us.
You radicalized me into my opinion and just, I was able to dig my heels in deeper into it. And so I got to thank you for that.
Happy to provide that outlet as always. That's why I think when I created an unpopular opinion, I figured that was the book to do it with because it seemed like everyone besides me was like, it's the best book since Lord of the Rings. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Maybe I got a bootleg or something because I'm not seeing it.
Yeah, and especially when something like Name of the Wind, it's so popular and you can have that unpopular opinion. Whereas on the flip side, something that Rich and I are uber impressed with is you've had Christopher Rocchio on your channel a bunch lately. We read the first book of Sun Eater.
You're right.
On three now, right?
I'm on the last few chapters of Demon in White. So
you got a storm coming, baby. That's all I'll say.
Oh, I know. Oh Lord.
But I'm gonna read this right here. I know you saw this, you tweeted this out. Where Christopher Rocchio in his book said to BookTube, most especially to Mike, you saved the series, you really did. And you tweeted out saying, well, damn, Christopher Rocchio, going to make me cry, man. How impactful is that? That you have just you influenced a series that Rich and I read, that everybody's reading, that is only existing now, or at least propelled because of you.
In part.
Because you covered it. You were the first to cover this back in 2020, the Sun Eater series, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been wild. I mean, like I said, me and Christopher have become like actual friends since then, mm-hmm. you know, but he didn't tell me he was putting that in the book. So yeah, it kind of caught me off guard when I had a billion people tagging me on Twitter and messaging me on Instagram saying, man, check this out. Because I hadn't got mine yet when that actually started to get arriving in people's mailboxes. And it was surreal. And yeah, I'm just glad that, you know, more people are finding that series now, because it's one of those where, you know, he thanks me for saying he wouldn't even have this career if it weren't for me. I was like, dude, all I did was tell him to give it a shot. It was like, if your writing wasn't good, you know, it would have never took off. People been like, oh, this guy's high, and never listen to anything he says again, which you'll find people do with my stuff a lot. But I'm thrilled that so many people are finding it now. It is still kind of amusing to me now, because since Daniel covered it, people are like, hey, have you heard this book Sun Eater Daniel was talking about? I'm like, yeah, I think I've heard of it, you know. But it's still to me, it's like that more people are finding it. That's what I wanted. I want to see more people getting their hands on that, because he deserves to be a household name in the sci-fi community, without a doubt.
Oh, definitely. I think, would it be fair to say, like, one of the biggest honors and biggest influences, like, for a booktuber, of being like one of the reasons why a series is still around, and the author himself is saying, like, it's that you yourself actually propelled a book to financial success. To me, I find that is just, that's one of the highest honors and greatest things someone in our space could actually do.
Yeah, I think when I first started doing this, my wife was like, what would you consider like a success of you doing this? And I said, I think I'd like to be like blurbed on the cover of somebody's book one day, you know? So to see something like that, it's just like, wow, okay. I mean, to have that kind of impact is really cool. It really is. And I'm glad that I was able to make it happen.
I would say it probably goes blurb is below a dedication in a book.
Yeah, like that, yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah.
Well, what are your thoughts on the kind of the reverse of it? Now that the proof is in the pudding, that your influence and you being able to talk about a book can ultimately decide whether it will succeed or fail. I know that's an extreme, because ultimately Chris Ferracchio is a great writer, and like if someone else, just someone needs to give it attention. But the fact that your attention is so valuable, how does it make you feel when you don't cover a book? Of like, because I know on our side, we get so many different authors trying to reach out to us to read, mm-hmm. and realizing that your attention is that valuable, how do you feel not giving it to other authors?
I mean, it's a slippery slope, you know, because I mean, I get hundreds of messages per day, please, you know, review my book. And I tell them, I'm just like, there's a pretty good chance I'm never going to get to it. But if you want to send it to me, you know, I can try to put some eyeballs on it by just, you know, referencing it in a book haul video or something like that, just what I can do to help out, because there's so much stuff I'll never get to read. And, you know, especially because you guys probably know, we have this tendency to want to reread things that we love, and just makes less and less time. But, you know, I got kids and a full-time job and stuff. So it's hard, but it is one of those things where I am hesitant to ever do a negative review, because I'm like, I don't want to feel like I'm responsible for, you know, starting. Because I tell people all the time, read it yourself, make up your own mind. But there are a lot of people who will just say, look, I align with this reviewer, whatever they say, I'm just going to be in lockstep with that. There are still a lot of people that do that. So the last thing I want to do is, I think I did one negative review one time, and I just felt sick to my stomach, afraid that the author might actually see it.
Was it Patrick Ruffus? I think he's fine.
No, it was Almakatsu. I had agreed to do all these horror books for in October one year, and I made my schedule beforehand that I was going to be reviewing. And then I read the book and I hated it. And it was about the nicest negative review I could have ever done, but I felt just awful about it. So I'll never, ever do that again. So now I'm just like, if I didn't really care for the book, I'll just mention on the weekly update or something, just be like, it just wasn't for me, you know, because I don't know. Last thing I want to do is just ruin someone's day, because I know someone that's out there busting their ass to write this book, and one person says they don't like it, it's probably going to ruin their day. No, I don't want to be responsible for that. And I definitely don't want to be responsible for feeling like I turned a group of people against it who've never read it.
Sure.
Yeah. How have we dealt with that? You think
it's hard, because on one end, I feel very similarly to how you do, but ultimately our whole bread and butter, like what makes us the whole reason we're on this platform is people like the authenticity of like they want to hear your true opinions. And if you only give positive opinions, people kind of it feels a little dishonest to not actually be truthful with what I dislike.
And well, that's why I think it's easy to get it confused sometimes that criticism doesn't mean it's bad. I mean, criticism, you don't have to be negative to give criticism. You can give constructive criticism and do it in a positive way. And I feel like I do that. All my views, I always do, you know, what makes it good or bad. And I always say, you know, this might not be bad for you. Some things that didn't work out for me or vice versa, something like that. So I think there is ways to do that. But, you know, not everyone is very good at that. And I'm just not the type to go in and rant about why I hate something like that. That early Patrick Rothfuss video is probably one of the few times I ever did a rant video. And that was more of me just being like, I don't get it. You know, everybody's favorite thing to say is, well, you just didn't understand it. Yeah, I didn't. And I'm just telling you, I didn't understand it. You know, I wish I understood.
That feels so targeted. That's all we do is rant, Mike. Come on. That's our whole thing. We ramble and rant. And you mentioned you being a critic. Do you see yourself as a critic? Would you say I'm a book critic?
I don't think so. I mean, I put the word Mike's book reviews at like when I first did this because I had no idea what to call it. It was just going to be like a little spinoff from my podcast I was doing at the time. Never thought it would actually like take off because at the time I was like, the reason I did it is because I didn't know anybody else that read the books that I read. So if I could go back and change it, I would change the name to something, you know, better.
what would it be? Let's troubleshoot this. Mike's what?
I have no idea. I mean, that's the thing. I don't know.
What about Mike Muhadi? Like, that's a great name.
You know, it's so weird to me that name is like in pop culture now. Because all the time I used to always go, what is Mud? What does that mean? Mudib, what is this? You know, Mudib, what is that, you know?
Yeah. I know for our sake, there was something a lot easier when we first started out is our level of influence wasn't as big. So us being negative on a book didn't feel as bad. You know, like we're not really doing any harm to anyone. We're being honest and it doesn't affect the author that much. As you get more success, that kind of responsibility seems to grow where, you know, if someone writes a book and they're already very successful, and I criticize the book, I'm not going to hurt their sales, really.
Right.
Versus someone who just started out, it's their first book, indie author, they haven't even gotten off the ground yet. Me giving a negative review
could really affect it. Career. Yeah, right. For real.
It's kind of my thoughts on it is if it already has been like traditionally published books that have like, I kind of see mostly as fair game of like, I'm going to be, if I'm negative, I'm negative. It's already been published. It's out there. It's fine. The indie published scene is where I'm more closed off, where if I don't like it, I'm just not going to say anything. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say I liked it even if I didn't. But generally, it's best to say nothing.
Correct.
And that's on a more microscope. Mike, we haven't mentioned it. Go subscribe to Mike if you haven't. Mike's book reviews, because you have, I think you're nearing 115,000 subscribers. That's a big number. That's got to feel
especially book, especially in BookTube.
Yeah, BookTube. That's massive.
I mean, it's bigger than a lot, but not. I mean, there's way bigger. You know, there's way bigger BookTubers, and apparently, I just got to talk about Romantasy, and you know, I could probably get up to about 700,000-750,000.
Oh, please tell me our Akatar review made it onto your suggested page. Did it sneak on there?
Well, the thing was, is like I was joking with some people that I told my wife, look, all those years you watched all those superhero movies with me and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. If you ever want me to read Sarah J. Maas with you, I will. And she was like, I don't want to read that trash. So I did offer, but I did read Leigh Bardugo, and that was
what book?
That was something. Shadow and Bone.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Got it. That is that
here's
very
a shock.
Similar.
It wasn't
is that
for me? You know, it's almost like it wasn't written for a mid-40s-year-old male. It's weird.
Yeah, that was actually the fun aspect of reading A Court of Thorns and Roses is going into it with the understanding that this book wasn't written for me and trying to see what a different audience would enjoy from it. And it made me really appreciate it because even though I can say, oh yeah, I don't like this, I'm not a fan of this, I can definitely see reasons why someone else would. Mm-hmm. I think it was really fun for me to see that. And especially now that everyone comments like, hey, look, first book, even fans are like, It's definitely the worst one. Read the second one's much better. So we'll give it a shot, but I don't
the
know.
Way I
had
I look
a lot
at
of
it,
fun.
Even if I don't like it, the content will be gold, right? It's got to
be.
Yeah.
But so. It genuinely was a fun time to
so
read
fun.
And review it.
Yeah.
That's the main thing, is I had so much fun reviewing it with you, Austin, that made it worth it.
It made the read worth it, right?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I think if we didn't have BookTube, we wouldn't have read that book.
Oh, definitely.
It made it fun to talk about it and make it more fun, because when we were reading ACOTAR, I knew before the romance genre, we were kind of surprising. I don't know if you heard this, Mike, but our genre, fantasy, sci-fi, or just books that we're into, spoilers are a no-no. Generally speaking of, hey, don't spoil. There's these big series with a lot of stuff going on. Some gets more muddied if you're talking about a big moment in Game of Thrones, kind of just permeated pop culture because of the show as well. But in general, don't spoil. But for romance books, apparently this is a thing where you can kind of just spoil the whole book. People don't mind as much. Like, I'm not speaking for everybody. This is what I've heard from romance readers. So when we reviewed ACOTAR, I kind of just spoiled it for you. Then we reviewed it. Mm-hmm. But in the other genres have different rules in their communities.
Their cultural, yeah. The cultural rules is very different in romance than
I've
it
heard
is
about
fantasy
this. Like they'll go to the end of the book and read the end of the book first. Because
yeah,
they just gotta know. And I'm just like, that's gotta be different. That's gotta be a generational thing. Because I was like, spoilers to Gen Xers was like, you know, and I mean when the MCU movies were real big, everyone was like, I gotta be spoiled, I gotta know. And I'm just like, you've got to be spoiled before you can see it? I don't even understand that. That doesn't register for me. So
Well, yeah. I thought, like, when people made those comments, I thought, like, oh, they must be monsters.
Yeah, horrible.
How could you do that? Crazy people.
Now you understand a bit more.
Well, that's the thing. You spoiled the whole book, and it did not negatively affect my enjoyment. If anything, it made me enjoy the book more.
Right.
You spoiled
I gotta
it.
Tell you guys, I did not think we'd be talking about this much about Sarah J. Maas. You guys were expanding my horizon.
That's why you came on the channel, right?
We're a romantic channel now.
Yeah, come on.
We're just, you know, view chasing clout monsters. That's all we're doing.
In the fantasy sci-fi genre, to bring us back to that, you've been a part of this now, not just fantasy sci-fi. I mean, how long have you been reading fantasy sci-fi outside of your channel?
Oh, yeah, since I read The Hobbit like in sixth grade, which was a long time ago for me.
Yeah.
There was times where like I got away from it. Like I was just pretty much onto like Stephen King and Michael Crichton and Anne Rice, I guess, if you want to count that as fantasy, as vampires.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until I got into the one Stephen King series I didn't read until a little later was Dark Tower. And that was just kind of reminded me, oh, man, yeah, I really love fantasy. And so that's when I said, no, I'm going to get all these series on my bucket list that I want to read one day. And it wasn't until I started this channel that I really got back into it. I started reading Brandon Sanderson a little bit around, gosh, I'd say 2015 or so. A friend of mine kind of recommended it to me after I got him to read First Law. And it's not like they're similar like at all.
Right.
But he was like, hey, let me pay it forward. He introduced me to Brandon Sanderson. It kind of opened the door a little bit for me to say I want to finally try this Wheel of Time thing. And that was like right around the time I started the channel. So, I mean, it's been a long time, but I mean, I've been reading Dune since I was 15, just over and over again. So, I mean,
well, you talked about this a little earlier on, that you tend to like to reread books generally.
I'm trying to stop it. I mean, look, with the Stephen King ones, I'm doing that because I started doing a Stephen King reread around 2015 or 16 or so. And then I started this channel, and that kind of interrupted it. Mm. But it's because a lot of his books, like I read them on like release day when they came out. It's been a minute since a lot of those. So when I started doing this thing Into the Multiverse, where I'm just going through every single one of his books, talking about the connections to the other books, stuff like that, I said, I need to revisit some of those before I talk about them again. But that led to a rabbit hole of, oh, I'm going to reread all these old Michael Crichton books. I'm going to reread the First Law books. And all that. And I was just like, I got to stop, because every month I was looking at my old TBR list, and I was like, huh, three rereads and one new book. You know, that's probably not a good idea when I'm telling all these people, I don't have time to read your book right now, you know, so.
That's a fair point, because your time, and where do you locate that for? Every book you read is going to take a certain amount of chunk out of your time.
Yeah.
And
I'm older than you guys. I'll never be able to read everything that I want to read, you know. So
as a compliment. You are older, therefore wiser, more knowledgeable. Yeah, but I mean, you
got more books under your belt.
Yeah,
more
belt.
Experienced.
Yeah, experienced. You got that.
Well aged.
That chisel to your voice. You know, you could tell. And if you're looking
seasoned,
yeah. If you're looking back through fantasy sci-fi since you started to where it is now, has it become cooler? Is it true that it used to be a lot more pop culture? People look down on fantasy sci-fi. How's it changed from when you grew up to today and how people view this genre?
I think there's two seminal events. It was Lord of the Rings trilogy, the movies, and then Game of Thrones. Because I was screaming from the mountaintops for anyone to read A Song of Ice and Fire before that show was even optioned by HBO. And I'm not into that dragon fairy bullshit you read, Mike. And then after Game of Thrones got big and these people got addicted to it, a lot more people started being more willing to try some of these things. So I'll say sometimes it's for the better, because I think back in high school and I got made fun of one day for wearing a Flash t-shirt under my baseball jersey. Oh. And then I was like, here we are 20 years later, and there's two moms in their 40s arguing about who's better, Captain America or Iron Man. I'm like, wow, how far we've come. You know, the same thing happened with like wrestling, professional wrestling. I used to love wrestling, and then it blew up and got super popular. So I feel like there's always that one event where something will come out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, hey, it's cool to like that now. I don't know if necessarily fantasy's there yet. I think it was if Game of Thrones had ended as popular as it was during its prime. It might have, but I think that turned a lot of people off. Be like, this is why I don't read fantasy, because, you know, they don't know how to end it, or they don't end it at all. You know, things like that. So, I think it feels like it in our circles, because I talk about we'll never have another event like the world stopping for the final book in a series like we were with Harry Potter. And in our community, they'll be like, oh, no, if a new Game of Thrones book or if Doors of Stone comes out, it'll be like, I think, not the whole world. The casuals don't read that, dude. And kids don't read that. I was like, you will never see all walks of life stopping to read a book.
I hate to break it, Mike. You're not reading that either. It's not coming out, buddy.
I didn't read book number two of Rob Buss's series, so I'm not worried about it. You know, but
okay, fair enough.
This is why we had him on.
It seems like we got that tunnel vision because we're in that community. We think, oh yeah, this is like the biggest thing ever. Like, you look at like Brandon Sanderson, who's probably the most popular with general readers of fantasy right now.
Yeah.
Even his biggest release doesn't touch like Dan Brown or Clive Cussler. You know, it's just because it's just fantasy is still such a niche thing. It always has been.
Yeah, to us, Stormlight 5 is huge, but I guess outside of fantasy niche or fantasy book readers, it's not a big deal, because you bring that up to, you know, at a party. Hey,
yeah,
you know who Brandon Sanderson is? You know about Stormlight 5? Likely not. It's very book oriented.
You get stared at like a dog that just got showed a card trick. We're just like,
that's exactly.
Get out of here, dork.
Well, man, I'm thinking more of Game of course, the ending of Game of Thrones probably spoiling things, and then for some reason this is just my opinion, maybe you disagree on it, but Hollywood's general negative trend on fantasy adaptations, even if it's good, it's not great. I haven't come across a fantasy adaptation in a long time that actually was stunned me or I thought was any better than anything else on something on CBS or anything.
I don't think there has been since Game of Thrones, because you look at all these things like Wheel of Time, like Rings of Power, and they're just like, why are you trying to be Game of Thrones? You know, you're established humongous fan bases. Please those people. You know, I don't understand what you're doing right now. It's like, why are you trying to make Wheel of Time gritty and R-rated? Stop it. What are you doing? That's not what it is, you know? And then, I don't even want to get into Rings of Power, but yeah, I think that they're just chasing. They want to be that next big event, but they're not doing anything original to try to be that thing. But yeah, I mean, look how long, you guys don't remember, is I remember when Lord of the Rings, I was following that being made, and I was so excited about it. And 1 year before Fellowship of the Ring came out, the Dungeons and Dragons movie came out. And it was pure dog shit.
Well, and it completely happened.
Made me be like, they'll never figure out fantasy genre. Lord of the Rings is going to be terrible. I was in the theater, and it wasn't until Gandalf's fighting the Balrog where I was like, oh my God, they did it. You know, it wasn't that long. I was still that long in the movie, apprehensive about, okay, when's the other shoe going to drop? When's this going to turn to dog shit? Like they always do.
Wow.
So yeah, fantasy just seems to be one of those things that just, they can't get right. I did I don't do like the essay thing very much.
Yeah.
But I got Bookborn's permission to do a kind of an essay format, you know, cause she's the best at it.
Oh,
and
sure.
I did, why can't they get fantasy adaptations right? And I looked at it as like, if you like these things, I'm not saying you can't, I'm just saying, here's why I think with most people, these tend to fail. And it just seems like they put the wrong people in charge. They don't put people in charge of it that love it.
The Witcher, and, right? Didn't The Witcher creators not like the books or
the
something?
Reports, they like actively hated it. And they like they wanted to get rid of their A-list actor because he wanted to stay faithful to the source material.
And Henry Cavill, we can all agree, just what a guy.
Perfect man.
He's a nerd like us, but also represents what we want to be.
Yeah. I said Henry Cavill is like the much more better looking and successful version of me. Yeah. He builds his own computer, he plays D&D.
Hey, you might have more YouTube subscribers than him. I don't think he has a channel.
I mean, all he's got to do is take a shirt off and he'll pass a couple million, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The funniest thing is he takes a shirt off. I think you'll get more men, male subscribers than women.
You know, we'll be the first.
For some reason, that's just a universal trend of all young guys go to the gym thing and, oh yeah, I'm going to get attention from women and realize, nah, the gym gets me attention from men.
That's very true.
Yeah.
With Mike was too relatable to that. Like he laughed a little too hard at that.
I haven't went to the gym in a long time. When I realized it was like a cult and you like couldn't get out of it, I was like, no, I'm just gonna. I started doing like P90X, and I did this stuff like from home since then. So I don't know.
Nice.
I don't know. Just how hard it is to get out some of these subscriptions, like a signed letter from Congress to get out of a gym membership. So
It's very expensive.
From what I understand, the only thing you have to do to have a gym membership is make sure you take a selfie while you're there, and boom, you've done your workout, right?
Oh, God.
Know how it works?
The amount of people recording in the gym is very disgusting, and it's incredibly
The funny
annoying.
Thing is like every time I go to like Barnes & Noble or Half Price Books, I'm like, should I film something? And I was like, no, I don't want anybody looking at me like I'm some kind of attention whore. So I don't know how people can...
Like, I mean, I was at the restaurant,
and they're talking on their phone while they're eating, and I'm just like,
I'm praying right now he didn't see our gym video. Did you? No, you don't know what we're talking about. I hope.
You did a gym video.
Well, we went at 2 a.m. and filmed a parody. It sounds bad when I say it out loud.
No, that sounds like fun.
We did it for, we were doing a merch drop for our first drop, which you dropped merch recently, right? I saw you did a recent merch drop.
I did like that auto-generated thing. And everybody's asking me like, can I see like how they fit and stuff? I was like, I don't have any.
Mike, I feel comfortable with you. I'm going to say how pissed off that made me feel. Richard and I spent 6 months getting artist and crafting and then getting bookmarks specially done.
Probably haven't got people telling you how much your logo sucks, because that's what I've gotten a lot of. Your logo sucks. You need to update it.
We also got that too.
We got that too. Yeah. And then we're making these bookmarks. We're making these shirts. Design amazing artists. And we set up this video, get designed, and we see you put up merch, and we're like, Mike definitely outsold us.
I just wanted everybody to, I mean, I put my logo together in like 5 minutes when I uploaded my first video. And the thing was, awesome. I just wanted people to be able to buy coffee mugs, because people tell me a lot, I'd love to have a coffee mug. I'm like, that actually makes a lot of sense, you know, so why not? But a lot of the comments like, oh, your logo sucks, you need a better logo. And I'm like, don't know
how to deal with it. Yeah,
I'm not exactly an artist. Like, I'm sure someone would love to do it for you. I'm like, I don't want to put that stress or pressure on anybody. So yeah,
fair enough.
You want a mug, you can buy a mug.
Yeah.
It adds something to the space of BookTube. I think is a little different than some of the other different genres on YouTube, like your Mr. Beast, even your a bunch of different subgenres.
Yeah, all those ones my kids watch. Yeah,
all the tech stuff where there's a high value a high value put on production value and making it very professional. Like, a lot of YouTube channels look better than most stuff you see on air. I don't know if you watch MKBHD's tech videos. If you're interested, but like, his videos are better than anything, like, technically wise, than you're going to see on
cinematic
TV.
Or
cinematic, just different kind of camera shots, the equipment that he uses.
He has to show he's credible, because he's selling tech stuff. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But I think that almost works in the
opposite. I try not to watch too many of those, because I'll just get jealous. Because I mean, 5 years into this, guys, I still struggle with lighting like crazy. And because I just record in this little shitty office, because this was never really a plan, you know, and I all these people will be like, oh, I just got like an $8 ring light. My lighting is perfect. And I'm like, you know, but it's just one of those things where I'll never, ever get it right, you know, and I'm just like, maybe that's part of the charm, you know, is that I'm not going to spend a lot of time well, you know, making my videos look crazy impressive with editing. It's like I get people constantly, oh, I like your little reading excerpts, but it'd be cooler if you could do like a, you could do your art kind of like Jay from Caption Wars. I'm like, I wish I could do stuff like that. I don't know how to do that. That'd be really great. If only, I would love to be able to do that. I can't do that.
Plus, do you have anyone, a team? Is this just you?
I'm the Jordan Peele of BookTube. I'm writer, director, producer. I don't have any.
Oh, yeah.
I asked my wife one time if she would just like come in and like proofread something. She's like, I ain't got time for that. So, yeah, no, I ain't got nobody. No.
Yeah. Oh. Hey, that's, we have two people.
We have two people.
Yeah.
Now, that's good. Are the duties evenly distributed between two people? No, no, they're not.
We have our strengths, our weaknesses, our strengths. Yeah. It works. Mike, it works. We're no tension.
I read more. Yeah. You do all the work.
With a partner for years, and yeah. I did everything back then, too. But, you know, it was one of those things where, like, I didn't have enough confidence to just kind of think I could carry a conversation by myself, and I do love conversation. That's why I love when someone comes to me to come on their channel. I was like, great, I get to talk to somebody else. You know, that's really nice.
And but, no editing on your end. Just, hey, it's
that's
done.
That's the best
it's
part
done.
Of being on someone else's channel. No editing.
Oh, yeah.
Woo, love it.
Yeah.
I mean, is that the universal answer? The worst thing about BookTube is not the comment, the negative comments, not the lighting, none of that stuff. Not coming up with the content. It's the editing. The editing is the worst part.
Yeah. Go ahead, Rich. Yeah.
I was going to ask you what your thoughts are on comment section with BookTube, especially being a larger channel than us. What are your thoughts on YouTube comment section? How does it affect
to you? Throw in context, we have seen a bunch of tweets where you'll post negative comments and then reply to them some snarky thing. So clearly you have experience. We want to hear.
No, they want you to be snarky. I will just always tell them thanks for watching, you know, because they don't know what to do. They want you to be nasty with them. And if you're not nasty, they don't know how to react. As always, I said, just fill them with kindness. They have no idea what to do. They want you to say something negative. They're trying to get a rise out of you. With me is I tell people the difference between that, because before I did books, I talked about sports and I talked about media, movies and TV. And as you know, vitriol like crazy in comment section for stuff like that. So when I started doing this, I was like blown away. I was like telling my wife, it's like almost 100% positive feedback. She said, well, that's because stupid people don't read. Well, I mean, unfortunately, that's not completely true. But it was a real shock to me. So still to this day, it's 99-1 positive. I post those negative comments because I think they're just hilarious. I mean, it's just, can you really be that upset that someone didn't put a book that they've never read on their top 10 favorites list?
Yeah.
I have no idea how that even registers to put that. And I'm just like, if you can really take that much time to put a really, really shitty comment on someone that you never even met in their life on their video, it just doesn't register for me. I couldn't do that.
Well, there's
so
also,
with me, it's like, you're going to get those negative comments. Just don't feed into the negativity. Just, hey, thanks for watching. I appreciate it. Thanks for giving the channel a try. You know, so I mean, I don't look at it as snarky. I just like, you know, hey, I appreciate the engagement.
Yeah, the replies, it's more so you'll post them and like clearly, you know, you'll post a negative comment and then reply to it kindly. And it makes it come off as like, oh yeah, they're definitely pissed off right now. Like, because you didn't give in to them. You didn't feed on and egg on the anger. So,
you know, I really love, honestly, I love comments on our channel in two factors. Of most of the time, I think the negative comments are also funny. Like, it's generally just kind of weird. Like, someone being that, from either it's a troll and they don't actually feel that way, or if they do genuinely feel that outraged at something, it's just kind of weird. I don't understand why.
Some of my patrons have theorized that people are doing this on purpose, hoping that I will pick their comments to put on Twitter and Instagram to make fun of.
That's not a bad theory.
That's quite possible.
So I don't know, because some of them are just so over the top. I'm like, this can't be serious. There's just no way.
Where do you get most of those comments? Is it more because you do your top 10 videos probably get people that haven't watched you as much, I imagine.
Yeah, that's their first introduction to the channel, so they have no idea myself. Probably the comment I get the most is like, you talk too long or you ramble too much, and I'm just like,
okay. Not a problem on this channel.
You know, right.
You're right at home.
All about it there. But that, or, you know, like I'll do my reading introductions for some reviews and things like that, and the comment will be like, actual review starts at 3:43, shit like that, you know. But again, you're gonna be bringing in a lot of new eyes to the channel, and they have no idea about your method or what you're like, so they don't know, so you just can't take it personal.
Oh, definitely. That's Rich, you think similarly, I assume, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Comments, and mainly this is other people's opinions, generally is very useful because depending on how you react to it, you can kind of self-analyze. Like, if a negative comment affects you emotionally, then there's probably something you need to figure out because they either touched on something you think that may be true, like maybe they have a point, that's why you feel a certain way about it, or it touched on something that you're sensitive about and maybe you need to work through that. Mm-hmm. But if it doesn't affect you emotionally, like,
right,
it's a good bar of like going, oh, okay, good to discount. But I've really enjoyed that of going through TikTok comments because they're the most vitriolic against us. Like, oh Lord, they don't like us over there.
I've tried. Man, nothing will turn me into my parents faster than going to TikTok. Also, I'll be like, what? And this is too loud and too just chaotic. I just can't. But I tried. A lot of people told me they could use someone like you on TikTok. It would be like, you know, counter-programming, someone that's chill and relaxed. And like, no.
I'm not sure how old your kids are, but did you introduce reading earlier, have a rule with reading / internet at all? Or how'd you work with that?
They have, I mean, my oldest, I started reading to him. Gosh, we started doing Harry Potter back when, I think when he was 8. And now he just likes me to read to him. And he's about to turn 12. And still, I'm like, well, you think maybe you want to read one of these by yourself? I was like, nah, you do all the voices and stuff. So I was like, okay, he's going to be an audiobooker. And my youngest is just insane. So yeah, no, it hasn't happened yet. But you know, we have like rules about how, you know, when you can and can't use your devices or whatever. But they ain't using that time to read. I'll tell you that much. So. Can't force it. You can't force it, sadly. But yeah, they're about to be 12 and 9 here in the next month or two. Yeah.
Yeah, wow. You had a great take, Rich, where kids, of course, it's, hey, we don't have kids. Mike, you need to clarify for us here. But Rich, you had the take that if the kid sees their parent reading a lot, and they respect the parent a lot, like one day they'll be like, you know what, they should become a read. They'll through osmosis, hopefully, see they're in an environment that reads a lot. So what was your whole point there?
Well, it was the point on parents that don't read a lot and don't read around their kids and mostly watch TV or play video games. Those parents that say like, oh, my kids don't read enough. Like, how would I get my kids to read? I think like step one is read yourself.
Yeah.
It's not sufficient. Like,
there's more to that.
But I would think the first step to encouraging your kids to read is them seeing you read.
Yeah. So Mike, how about us non-adults, non-parents lecturing you? And this is what do you think about that?
Kids are different. That's for sure. Mine, zero interest. In fact, they don't respect the fact that I'm reading or nothing. They'll just come right up. What are you reading? Let's do this instead. You know, they're that type, you know? So, I mean, the only time they bother me when I'm reading is when they want me to do something else, you know? So, but again, like I said, I can't speak for everyone's kids.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that might be a thing. I mean, I want to say like something might have come through because my oldest had no real interest in Dune until he found out like how much I love it. And then one day he was just like, do you think I'd like the movie? I was like, I'm not really sure. He's like, well, can I try it? Because I want to see why it matters to you. And I was like, that's going to make me cry a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, to the point now where, you know, we went and saw part two in the theater and he's doing this and stuff around the house now. He's trying to use the voice on his brother and stuff. I mean, that stuff's cool. But like, as far as like reading, I gave him the graphic novel of Dune. He's like, eh. So, I mean, I've got a spare deluxe edition that I'm saving for him, hopefully one day, you know, but you never know. You can't force it. I definitely don't want to force it.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
I mean, that's probably why I know people my age, especially, I'm sure this is true on across different generations, is a reason why some of my peers said they don't read now or they don't like reading is a lot of because school forced them to read.
Yeah.
And read books that they just did not enjoy. So if every single book that you're forced to read is not particularly enjoyable to you and it's always homework, it's always a chore, you just start associating reading with work and not actual fun. So it doesn't surprise me. But yeah, you can't force a love of reading on anybody. Do you think that's Do you think for reading is going to be going away? Is that kind of like a risk that we should be concerned of in the future because of all the different alternatives of entertainment? Or do you think reading will almost always be here to stay?
I mean, people always think that I'm saying that if you audiobook that you're somehow inferior, and that's not never what I mean. I'm saying that now that a lot of people have that option, I think a lot of people are doing that over because they can do that while they do other things, which I respect. I wish I could do it. I would love to be able listening to ADD. It's one ear out the other. I don't know what I just heard, so I can't do the audiobook thing. I've tried several times. I've tried at different speeds. All these advice and all these recommendations that people give me, I've tried it. Doesn't work for me, but there's that. There is always going to be the, I'll just wait for the movie types. There's just so much other stuff to do. I mean, look, how many times have you said, God, there's just too much good stuff to watch? You know, I got all these streaming services. There's too many good shows. I can't watch them all. You know, people, I think, just have so many different options than my generation had, where it was like, okay, well, there's like three things on TV and all of them suck. I guess I'm just going to go read, you know? So it was is one of those things where you look at like the, not just the literacy level, but just like the amount of people that say they actually read on their own free time has gone down every year since the 90s, you know? So yeah, it's a real big concern, I think. So that was kind of one of my things when I started. I just want to raise awareness for, hey, reading's still fun. It's really great. It's a movie in your mind. You know, you can cast anybody you want in your head.
Henry Cavill, all the time.
Every role.
Dalinar, yep. Shallan, yep.
We all have like that one actor in our head that we cast. It's like just like every, for some reason, James McAvoy is like almost in every damn book I ever read.
James McAvoy, let me look him up. I should know who this is.
James McAvoy? He played Professor X in the new X-Men movies.
Oh, okay. And now I know. Yeah, didn't know that was his name.
It's also for whatever reason, I don't know, that became like my go-to cat, him or Michael Fassbender, who are both in the X-Men movies. So maybe the X-Men movies like really like stuck in my head or something. I don't know.
He has a face that could fit a lot of characters, maybe. I see that.
I think there was Split where he had 23 different personalities. And I said, hey, he could play any role, literally. You know?
Well, how then with all the, if you're not doing audiobooks and you're doing just physical and you're a parent and you got a full-time job and you're doing book two, when do you read?
I mean, I'm sure you can see the bags under my eyes all the time, my videos. I just don't sleep. I do most of my reading at night for sure, because that's the only time it's ever really quiet. But, you know, sometimes I'll come home from work and they're brain dead zombies playing Roblox on their iPads, and I can take advantage of that and I'll do that. Just, I don't watch a ton of TV unless it's something my wife and I are watching. I don't scroll a lot, you know, because it's a big question. How do you find so much time to read? And I'm like, well, if you put the phone down, you know, that's the whole reason I originally bought a Kindle, that and the fact that I was going blind, is that I said I wanted the less distractions because I was reading on my iPad, which is horrible for your eyes. Don't do it. But I would always be on my reading on my iPad and I'd be like, oh, I'm going to look that word up. Next thing I know, I'd been looking at other stuff for 45 minutes. So it was distractions.
Right.
So I want to get a Kindle so I don't have any internet connectivity, because you can do stuff. Like, who does that? Who's on a Kindle? Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to surf the web on this sucker. But I wanted to eliminate those distractions, and that actually helped me quite a bit. So that's what I recommend doing, is don't spend time scrolling your phone, which I know a lot of us can do. I don't use TikTok. I use Instagram and things. Twitter, I admit that I have a problem with that sometimes when there's sports stuff on, because I'm a big sports fan. But I try not to spend very much time on there, and I don't watch a ton of TV. So if I'm not really gaming or anything right then.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's just, I got free time. I got 10 minutes. I'll read a chapter, you know, it adds up. But still people are like, how do you read so fast? I'm like, I do like 3 to 4 books a month. Have you seen these other booktubers? I read 72 books this month.
That makes us feel so normal. Oh, Mike, yeah. You have no idea.
I'm struggling, and I think it's great that I'm able to do a book a week.
It's great pace.
I'm proud of myself for that.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, if I can fit that much more. Like if I read maybe I could do 2 Dungeon Crawler Carl books in a week.
Yeah, yeah.
Martha Wells.
I would do a Dresden Files book in a couple of days, you know. That was just because it was just so easily digestible. But I just read Dreamcatcher by Stephen King. I mean, that took me a week, you know, but that's a pretty 650 page book on hardcover. Yeah. But I feel like that's an acceptable pace. I just don't know how these people are doing books like that. How are people doing Sun Eater in a month? I'm like, how? It took me 3.5 weeks to read Demon in White. How are you guys doing this? You know, because that's just, you gotta chew your food with those books, right? I mean, you're reading Demon in White, you know, you can't blaze through that.
Part of it's probably audiobook.
I will be finishing Demon in White in like total reading time is basic 7 or 8 days total. And I don't even think I've read consistently all those days, but it was it's audiobook entirely. Mm. That's how I was listening to it. But my theory on it is there's a lot of people out there with jobs that are not, like, they're coasting on their jobs and they're reading during the working hours.
That's how you did it.
That's how I did it. Yeah. there was a solid year in my life where I was reading somewhere between 3 to 4 books a week-ish because I was able to read for close to 8 hours a day at work. Oh. And then I read at home, and then I read on the weekends.
Did you see Mike's grimace? Oh.
No, I'll be really caught up, and I'll admit to sneaking something sometimes at work, you know, but I read at my lunch break. So, I mean, that's about 30 minutes there each day. But I'll be able to sneak another 30 minutes in somewhere, you know. But 8 hours, that sounds like a dream, getting paid to do that. That's a dream.
I was working night shift security guard at a data center. Really? So I'm sitting at a desk just kind of at basically a checkpoint type deal.
Yeah. Someone's got to be there. Yeah.
Someone's got to be there. I wasn't allowed internet access. So...
perfect it, environment.
It yeah. forces
you. You were literally getting paid to read, man. That's the dream.
Oh, I know. It was.
That's the dream.
But now I actually have to work for my money.
Hey, you guys started to get asked yet? Hey, have you ever considered doing this as a full time job? Have you gotten asked that question yet?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
I was like, they want to pay me, you know, what my job pays me and the benefits and the bonus the 401k. Sure, I'll do this full time. No, that ain't happening.
Whoa, this is a risky one. Yeah.
We're doing our best. a while ago now, we started off doing, we wanted to give it a shot to do it full time. And that step was having Austin go full time. I support him with. Yeah, I give him money for it.
And now the channel's able to make up. We're almost there. No 401k, no any of this, but hey, it's something. We're gasping above water, but it's we're risking it.
Yeah.
I mean, Mike, you are correct with all the responsibility side of things. We don't have kids to take care of.
Most of our irresponsible decisions comes from, we only have ourselves as a responsibility. We won't be able to do this for much longer.
Being young and supple.
I wish YouTube had been a thing back then. That'd have been great. Like, I didn't even know there were people on the internet talking about books until by accident when I uploaded those Wheel of Time videos way back in 2019. I had no idea that BookTube was a thing. Because, like, I was like, what's, I never get this many comments on my videos. What's going on? And they're like, you got to check out this channel. Check out. I was like, what are you talking about? And I was like, wow, there's actually people who talk about books on YouTube. I thought this was just like angry video game nerd movie trailers. I thought that's all YouTube was, you know? So,
What point would it, I mean, probably a long point, because to make up for your 401k and safety and all this, but would there ever be a point where you'd quit your job? What would that measure be?
Yeah, if Spotify made me an offer to do this on there, like Joe Rogan or something, sure. Sure.
That makes sense. You want a contract. You want someone with, you want guaranteed income.
Like, that's why I would never work in sales. I got to have my money guaranteed. I work in financial risk analysis. So to me, it's all about,
this makes sense now. You hate everything we're talking about. I'm like, yeah, risk it all. Financial risk assessment.
Look at the people who depend on TikTok for like their revenue, you know, their daily life. And now TikTok might go poof. You know, those people might be screwed. I was like, I've never want to depend on, because these internet bubbles, man, they can burst at any moment. So to me, it's like, if you're making a living off of it, go for it. Just make sure you're keeping some put away for later.
It's also about not just, if all that you have is kind of the internet, like you only have one platform and you only have like the dancing monkey type deal, that that's all you can offer, like just some entertainment. Ultimately, that seems to be kind of fleeting, and you're gonna eventually pop. It's not gonna last forever. I mean, a lot of this is properly utilizing an actual audience and diversifying across multiple platforms, trying to offer more. Use that. Use your connections to go to other things, not trying like spinning your wheels and stagnating. So, I mean. That's at least what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Also, Mike, with your channel, do you want it to end at BookTube, or do you have any aspirations for jumping to something else or propelling you into a certain thing? Or is this just more, hey, I'm having fun BookTube?
Just don't have enough time to do anything else. But fair. Yeah. I mean, like, my wife asked me not that long ago, she's like, if you could talk about anything and have the same kind of success, would it be, I was like, NFL football. I mean, that's my favorite thing in the world, you know, but there's a bazillion NFL channels out there.
Dallas Cowboys?
No, I'm Houston Texans.
Okay. Didn't know where in Texas you were from. Okay. You're Houston. Sorry for the offense. Yeah.
It's all right. I don't hate the Cowboys like everyone else does here.
Okay.
I grew up in Atlanta, so I hate New Orleans. That's just something I never really was able to let go of. But again, I don't want to detract. But I mean, this is my most passionate hobby. And so, of course, I love talking about it and things. But, you know, if I could do the same thing and get to talk about football all the time, yeah, that'd be great.
What made you start BookTube instead of some NFL thing? Is it because there's so many ones and you didn't think you could
I had done the sports thing, podcasting, because podcasting's a way different animal than YouTube. The way iTunes was set up at the time, you had no idea. There was no like real commenting system or anything like this. You could look and see, okay, well, I've got like 600-800 people downloading every episode, but you know, I never get any feedback or anything like that. So it was just kind of a different world. And so I said, me and my friend Danny, we had been doing this thing we called Geek Media Corps for a while. We just talked about like anything, movies, books, TV, music, video games.
That was before Mike's Book Reviews?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And it was actually the YouTube channel before this. I just changed the name. But
you want a new name, but yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And this was just kind of like a brand expansion, because he didn't really read like I did, and we didn't really have time to talk about it on the podcast. So it was just kind of like a thing. And then it was just kind of like perfect timing that started to get bigger, and he was getting married and having a baby and stuff. So we just kind of said, I guess I'll just try to do this for a while. And
so you're saying you had two people. And you split up, and they went their own separate ways.
We are still very tight. We still talk constantly, like all the time. He's up to his neck in twin baby diapers and stuff now. So you know, good for him.
Yeah. But if you went down the sports route, well, you had went down that sports route a little bit, and not getting that feedback, you think you would have kind of been on your deep end as well with books? If you were doing books and not getting any feedback, it's a big part of BookTube is I'm saying something and people are actually responding. It's part of a conversation piece. How debilitating is that if you just have a BookTube channel and then you're just not putting anything out there? We obviously create content to be a part of the conversation. There's a thing. There's a reason you're not just talking to the wall.
Like I said, I did that for like a decade with almost like no feedback. So to me, it was always just like something I wanted to do. I was pretty good at it. So I was like, I'll just go ahead and do that. And I had loyal listeners and stuff. Like I said, just wish it wasn't a real big way to do feedback because at the time you weren't really putting podcasts on YouTube. That really wasn't like their thing. So I never really thought about it. And it wasn't until I started doing this that all of a sudden they made it really easy to put everything on Spotify and all that stuff. So who knows? Mm-hmm. Who knows? You know, that stuff could probably, like, I do have a podcasted version of this show, but I don't do very much on there, honestly. All I put on there is like these long form conversations and stuff, but I don't know if it would be any different, really. I never went into doing this thinking, oh, well, if I don't have some success, I'm going to quit doing it. It really was just kind of meant to be kind of a side thing.
Right.
But when I won't lie, when I was getting a lot of engagement with it, I was just like encouraged, like, wow, all I've really wanted for years was someone to talk back to me, you know? So that was really cool. And it was good timing, too, because, you know, my company had gotten bought and I decided to go back to school and it was just me and like at the time, my 3-year-old didn't talk a ton. So it was like, I needed like adult conversation, that's kind of how it felt. And so it was a nice outlet. It just kind of, like I said, just kind of a happy accident for sure. But I never really went into it saying, oh, if I don't do this tonight, I'm not successful. I don't have instant success. I'm going to stop doing it. It was just kind of neat.
Yeah. What kept us going is just that we, regardless of having no views, we kind of just had a conversation every time.
Yeah. It made it a lot easier for us, but definitely the best thing to come out of all of this is our Discord community that we made. It's so weird now to think about that before all of this, I would read a book and I'd have no one to talk to about it. Absolutely no one.
And now I would talk to my wife about it and she would be like, that's nice, dear. Yeah.
But I quite literally, any book I read, I have someone to talk to about it. I talk with people about every single book I read. I find that amazing. Like, what an absolute privilege that is. And I never had. I think I discovered your videos when I started reading Wheel of Time. And I wanted to, I read Wheel of Time, really closely after Stormlight Archive. And I was looking it online. I kind of wanted to. No one else would really read Wheel of Time. You know, this guy, he wouldn't read Wheel of Time with me at the time.
Yeah.
And man, the YouTube was my space to it's my outlet. And now I have an amazing outlet to talk about books with. That is the best thing about this whole platform, the whole experience.
And Mike is kind of the in between of us where, hey, you love Wheel of Time and Red Rising. Is that right?
Yeah.
Look, there's no arguments here. We're all kumbaya.
I have you know, big criticism about Wheel of Time. I still love it. I have big criticism of it. Whereas Red Rising is a perfect animal.
Oh my God. Mike, welcome home.
A dagger to the heart.
Welcome home, Mike. Team Red Rising. Although I do think there's flaws, but I love it so much, not even worth mentioning. It's amazing. What's your favorite book in Red Rising?
I have flaws with Dark Age, but when I was doing my videos with Howler Pod, they pretty much told me I was wrong about them. So.
As they should. I just got to know, what was your favorite of the series?
Golden Sun is probably my favorite book in that series.
Okay.
It's so good.
Wow. Now, Mike just has the correct opinions. Now, how do you feel, Rich? Now,
you understand. This is why I go to... I got the two booktubers. The thing was,
a good friend of mine, it's like the only in real life friend I have that reads this. So he's the one who recommended Brandon Sanderson to me back in the day.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
He recommended Red Rising when I was saying I want something that's kind of like Dune meets Ender's Game kind of thing. And he said, I think he'd probably like Red Rising a lot. He had read the trilogy. And I read the first book and I was like, dude, this is crap. I was like, this is like Hunger Games on Mars. What is this trash?
All right, Mike's not perfect.
He was like just feeling awful about it. And the thing was, it's like I had already bought the trilogy and just on a whim, I said, I felt like there was some good ideas in there. Maybe just try book two. And man, it just melted my face off. Yeah. And then I go back and revisit part one. I'm like, well, I love it now. But at the time, I was like, book one's nothing special. Whereas book two is a whole lot of special. And it's one of my favorite science fiction books ever. So sometimes, guys, I know that people hate to hear it. sometimes you do got to wait till book two for something to get really good. Now, when it's Malazan, people telling you, oh, book six, just wait for book six. It gets amazing. Or Cradle, wait till book 12. Like book 12, huh? Okay, cool.
We've been recommended Cradle a lot. Yeah. A lot of people. I will probably eventually get to it, but what would you say, actually? Would you recommend Cradle? Or
look, here's the thing with Cradle. Is like, it has a huge fandom. So obviously he's doing something right. And I'm never going to detract from what Will Wyatt is doing with that series. To me, I'm a character first guy. And people all about that series, like, well, the characters don't even matter. It's about the progression. It's about the powering up. And I'm like, dude, I love Final Fantasy. I don't want to read a book about grinding for XP. That's not my thing, man. You know, so... It just, I have no idea why viewers thought that was going to be something that I would like, especially all I do is just stump all the time about how much I need good characters. You can have the best world ever. If you don't have good characters, I'm not invested. Like Three Body Problem, I bounce off that because the characters are like, man, whatever. Hmm. You know, so I there's obviously a really big fandom for Cradle. So he's doing something right. I just, it's not, that's just not, was it progression fantasy or lit RPG?
Yeah,
I don't want to read about your tabletop game, buddy. Sorry, it's just not.
It's a
my
no
thing.
Dungeon crawler, Carl.
I got it. I haven't read it yet.
I would actually recommend that to you because it
good
does
character. Yeah,
it's got good characters in it,
but it's very much grind for XP, which you might not like.
Yeah, but so the point of it is like there's some good characters to follow, but also
if
it's
I like
just
your characters.
Funny.
I can get over some other things. Yeah.
Fair. Okay.
The main thing is it's just funny. It's funny, cool world. And really endearing characters that you want to see them succeed. I mean,
yeah. Is there anything that's gone outside that rule? I'm a character first as well, but then something. Then I read something like Piranesi that I really like the character, but I read something that goes outside my norm where I'm character first, but something surprises me. Is there anything like that for you? Any book ever that really wasn't character centric, but just floored you?
Pretty much almost all of Michael Crichton's books, I would never say character is like the peak. His is like the idea is always really good. And kind of the idea of, you know, hey, this is right around the corner. You know, is this something we should be messing with? Like some kind of technical achievements or some kind of evolutionary process.
Okay.
And so, I mean, with Michael Crichton, is like the idea has to be really good. Now, that's why I thought I was going to like Three Body Problem because it had really good ideas. I just could never really get invested in it. Now, I'm going to watch the Netflix series. Because I do think that they could probably fix some of the problems I have with it, I think. But to me, your idea has to be just like ridiculously good for me to get on board with it outside of, you know, just no character development, no character that I give a damn about.
You know, this actually was part of our between us and I, our disagreement on Wheel of Time. So I do understand when people talk about like especially early books of, yeah, the characters are not. It's. Can
Wait,
sometimes
which one
be
y'all
difficult.
Likes Wheel of Time? Which one doesn't? Who likes Wheel of Time?
I love Wheel of Time. It's my favorite
okay.
series.
I do okay. not.
He very much not just dislike. You hate it.
I'd say what you think of to Name of the Wind is what I probably think of Wheel of Time. Yeah.
And
I will always tell people to this day that if Wheel of Time had been like a good 8-9 books, it'd probably be the best series ever. It did meander a bit too long, but I can see how people bounce off some of those characters early, you know, the braid tugging, the folding the arms under the breasts, the just always being angry and boxing people's ears and shit. I get it. I get why some people don't like it. I mean, even I'm like, dude, really? You've got grown ass people that are going to spank someone? Seriously, you know? So I have quirks about it that I don't like and stuff, but I do think that the characters are completely different by the end of the series. So he does a good job with that. He just takes a long time to get there.
I mean, it's kind of the repetitive nature of a lot of other books. The character starts in one place and then, you know, has a moment and changes because they don't stay the same person the whole book. A lot of Robert Jordan's characters, like, they need several moments to learn the lesson. They don't learn the lesson immediately. They keep messing up, they keep failing because of their flaws, and it takes them like five, six times.
Like when I started, everyone's like, oh, Matt Coffin's my favorite character. I'm like, I can't stand him. Are you serious? And then sure enough, by the end, I was like full on like,
yeah,
hell yeah, give me the hat, man. Give me some dice. I'm going to go cosplay because Matt is the best, you know? So, I mean, it's amazing. Like Nynaeve, could not stand Nynaeve. She's my favorite character in the series.
Yeah.
Nynaeve.
Same. It's so weird to now in retrospect on when I was doing a reread, I loved it even more. Just because seeing where they go and their quirks and their oddities and all the things that make people frustrated with them endeared them to me. Mm-hmm. And so I always saw it for me, it's a positive. I don't know why I enjoy seeing them being just incredibly frustrating characters in the world.
Also, you're very much more the world and concept person. And Wheel of Time gives that to you, though. Wheel of Time gives you world and... Mike, you're very much on the character, so it kind of gives you both. It's such a long series that you have pretty much every trope you could, and trope using that as a positive term, like it has something for everybody, but on the bad side it has everything. So might you could pick out something you dislike or emphasize what you do like. I feel like it could go all over the place.
Well, I hate that trope has become a negative connotation.
It really has. I mean,
trope is what brought me to this genre in the first place. You know?
Yeah, so. Trope's good.
I like, you know, I love the trope of the retired badass. You tell me that on the back of the book. Just the author says retired badass is in this book. I'll pick
it's
it up.
John
and I'll
John Quinn meets Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
John Wick. Oh, is it John Quinn? John Wick meets
John
Game
Wick.
Of Thrones.
Oh god!
Oh, I thought you were. I thought you were saying like one of Gwyn's books.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I thought
right
you were
before we came on, I finished doing my Faith on the Fallen video, so I guess
makes
I got
sense.
John Gwynn.
Okay,
but there's some other different flaws with A Wheel of Time. Just kind of thinking of, I think the biggest.
Well, I love
issue
coming of
it,
age,
but,
and there's a ton of coming of age.
Would you say that's your favorite trope?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Coming of age under duress. Like, I mean, that's what made me such a big Stephen King fan. Yeah, no doubt.
What do you think does the best? What's your favorite book or series that does the coming of age trope?
The series? I mean, put me on the spot. I would say maybe Red Rising.
Keep poking the flame.
Well, I mean, it just kind of depends, because you got something like Red Rising, it has a big time jump, you know, in the middle of it, from them being kids to them being adults. But it does have their coming of age in that first trilogy.
Hey,
and
Empire
you kind of see them
Sun
as like, you know, jaded 30-something-year-olds. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, Wheel of Time would be a good pick, I think. Faith of the Fallen would be another really good pick.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, you hear characters, like, for example, I just talked about Faith of the Fallen, so I'll stick with that one. These characters start out preteen, teenagers or whatever, you know, and by the end of the series, these are the people that are going to be making what the world's going to be here at the end of the book. So it's a fun, kind of use that lightly when it comes to John Gwynn, because, you know, it's never a fun struggle to get there. It's called a struggle for a reason. But I don't know about series, but I'm like It by Stephen King is like my favorite, because you do get the point of view of them as children and how they undergo that horrible, horrible experience and learn life lessons way earlier than they should, and how it affects them even into their adult years, and then remembering that. That, to me, is like the perfect coming-of-age story. Or To Kill a Mockingbird, you know, one or the other.
Sure. I really liked Christopher Rocchio's angle. So for specifically, I think just mainly the first two books of it is kind of a coming-of-age story, but it's done in a very unique angle that I love.
Very spoiler light. Very spoiler light,
but it's...
Well, time works differently in space. So a lot of years will be going by, but not for Hadrian.
Yeah. Exactly. But for Hadrian, there's kind of two elements that I really enjoyed in seeing his angle on it. Is one is the change of ideals and the change of your principles over time from a young person to an older adult. And then just the nature of rebellion against your society, and how, you know, young people want to rebel against what was, and then how you change and you start finding out your
Oh, you're mean like in Red Rising?
Hmm?
Yeah, like in Red Rising. Oh, we can do this better. Oh, now we're in charge. Oh shit, this is harder than I thought it was going to be. Yeah, that, I mean, isn't that really like coming of age for anyone? Oh, I can do this better than the people older than me. And then you get there, and you're like, why did I want this? You know, why did I want to grow up?
You Mike, know? You're going to make me tear up. I finally have an ally for the first time ever. It feels so good.
I mean, you guys' videos about Red Rising have been dropped in my comments multiple times. Hey, what
no
do you think?
Way.
That's really?
Thing. That's the thing is when I really love a book, people love to drop a comment to me about someone that didn't. Like apparently Daniel Green reviewed Dark Matter. People know I love Dark Matter by Blake Crouch.
Oh my goodness.
Daniel Green didn't like it. What do you think about that?
Oh.
He's allowed to have an opinion? I don't know what you want me to say about this. But
by the way.
Yeah, the number of people that have said, hey, check out these guys' Red Rising thoughts.
You know? Is that what they've generally said? They've been like, oh boy, you got to see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
That's the thing is just, I really like Red Rising. I don't hate it at all. But because you're insane, I look like I'm crazy. I look so negative in comparison to you. Just because I'm going, hey, look, the first book is not the same as the second. Like, it's pretty good. It's a good book. I'm not saying it's the Red Rising, the first book, is perfect. I say that, and I look like a hater.
That's where you're wrong. Even just like Wheel of Time for you isn't perfect, but it is perfect. Same thing with Red Rising.
Fair enough.
You can't say anything negative. Only say the positives. But it is true.
So I'm guessing those custom Red Rising covers back there are I know who those belong to.
These were sent from our patron Lucas. And
oh wow,
nice. Amazing gift. And yeah, thank you, Lucas, for that. These were so cool. And he also we also got this, the Way of Kings version, signed from Sanderson from a patron as well. Like some of these are just featured from people that sent us stuff. And then the rest is Rich's. But just
Well, you've got Lightbringer on your shelves, and I mean the Brent Weeks book, not the Pierce Brown book. Oh, so that's that's bringing the quality down enough to where it
hey.
So
I can agree with you on the last book, especially.
The thing was, is like, I loved book one and two, like a lot. Book three, I was kind of like, okay, it's fine. Book four was like so god awful that I was like, I need a break before I read book five. And everyone's like, yeah, book five might be worse. I was like, all right, well, then I ain't going to do it.
Yeah, because notoriously, isn't the fifth book the one that loses everybody? I think it felt like filler.
It was a lot of bloat, but from what I understand, he really did a bad job of bringing it home. So,
okay. The main thing is, all the basically the conclusions to all the characters, I think, were just objectively wrong. That's what to me that's
I
what
I just decided. Brent Weeks is
ending.
Not an author for me, man, because Night Angel made me want to freaking kill myself. So,
Night Angel, is that bad?
Here's the thing, it's like I tried reading it around like 2017 or so, and I was like, this guy can't decide if he wants to be YA or if he wants to be grimdark. It's like he played Assassin's Creed one week and said, how do I make this like super edgy, but also for preteens? And so I kind of bounced off of it. And I thought, maybe I was just in the wrong state of mind. I tried reading again like about a year and a half ago. God, I just wanted to like take a spoon and jam it into my eyeballs. Oh. It was so terrible. So, and I know people love that series, but good Lord. That's not an author.
Mike, what happened to you not wanting to be negative about books?
He doesn't post videos. He only does it on other channels.
So there are some, and that's why people will constantly bring up when I don't like a book, like you guys did with Name of the Wind. Actually, Name of the Wind didn't make me angry. I think there is a lot of good in that book.
Yeah.
It's just the hype and the legacy, I guess you say, that book has now, where I'm just like, I don't understand why you guys find student whining about student loans so amazing. I have no idea why you guys like this so much, you know, but there's stuff I really like about it. I think he's got an incredible writing style. I think Christopher Rocchio is better. And I'm not saying that because Christopher's my whole, like when I read this, I was like, well, I don't need Patrick Rothfuss anymore. I've got Christopher Rocchio now. I feel like he's just as beautiful a writer. Robert Hobb is just as beautiful of a writer. But I don't know. There's lots of things I did like about Name of the Wind. It's just character wasn't one of them. I absolutely hated the main character. And I think something like Gone with the Wind, it's like, yeah, that has an unlikable protagonist too. But for some reason, I was rooting for her. I'm not rooting for both. And it's unreliable narrator. I don't care. I don't care if it's unreliable narrator. It's an unlikable, unreliable narrator. So it's just, no, it's not for me.
I'm mainly pissed about, like, it actually did make me angry. Of the ending to me angered me. Austin here has not read it. We're gonna have fun hating it together. I'm hoping that we'll have this in common together. But the ending to me for several different points pissed me off. To the point where I actually did have some fun during the book. Or at least I enjoyed some aspects. There's a particular scene, like a musical scene in the book that absolutely floored me. It's one of the best written scenes I've ever read. I didn't know you could write in a book and describe music that way and properly integrate it. That wowed me.
That's the only reason Lin-Manuel Miranda wanted to do the adaptation was because of what you're talking about right there. I can't disagree. Really? Like I said, those things like that are stunning.
That's actually true. Like from his own words.
I want to say they did option it there for a minute. Oh, yeah, wow. Lin-Manuel Miranda had actually wanted to do it because of what you're talking about right there. You know,
wow. I mean,
that guy's a musical genius. So clearly, he's able to get something through in his words to someone like that.
Yeah,
and that's what upsets me about it. It's like the guy's got so much talent, you know, and it's just like. I won't lie. It doesn't hurt that the guy is completely unlikable and he's such a jerk to people, you know? And I think that's why a lot of people that have been waiting for the longest time have kind of turned on him. You know, I feel like as someone who started reading A Song of Ice and Fire in the year 2000, I should absolutely hate George at this point, but I don't feel like he's ever been a complete dick to fans. You know, so that's what makes it where I'm just like, look, I'm disappointed, but I don't hate the guy.
Didn't Rufus promise a chapter and it didn't come or something with donations?
He promised several different things.
He like raised money then didn't do it, then didn't deliver. So,
I don't know how you. I don't even think that was the first time. I think it happened it happened once and he didn't deliver on the promise. And then he talked with Daniel Green and like, oh, I actually will. And then he didn't do that either. Do you know of other instances other than that like he's been bad to fans particularly? I haven't seen too much.
I just know that like anytime anyone will ask him, you know, about the book, he'll be like, fuck off, you know. It's just I mean, he was talking with I think it was Jim Butcher, and was saying that like he was upset that like he got in an elevator and someone asked him about the book or something like that. And that was like 6 years ago. So, I mean, that was a long, long time. But I don't follow it as much as everyone else does. It's obsessed with it because I don't care. I mean, I'm thankful I didn't like the first book, you know, because I would suck if I had another great series I was waiting on, you know, forever.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I'm glad I didn't like Lies of Locke Lamora as much as everyone else, too. I was like, okay, cool. So the two main fantasy series that look like they're never going to be done outside of Song of Ice and Fire. Cool. I ain't got to wait for those. You
know? I'm actually very thankful I didn't like the third book because I actually did like the first and second book, and I was really excited. Then third book wasn't that enthused with
Bastards,
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think it was terrible, but I didn't really like it. And so, yeah, the fact that the fourth book is probably not going to come out doesn't bother me as much.
I didn't dislike Lies of Locke Lamora. I was just like, if this is the best it has to offer and the second and third books are kind of divisive, probably not going to keep going. So I didn't dislike it. It gets pegged in with Name of the Wind for me, but I didn't dislike it. I just thought it had some issues, but I like a lot of stuff about like the dialogue is like S tier. I mean, the dialogue is amazing. I love the dialogue in that book, but there was a lot of other things I didn't really care for. But again, I didn't dislike it. I just thought it was fine.
Yeah. Mike, I don't want to take too much of your time here. Rich, do you have a closing question for him? Because I have one other to toss in there if you don't got one.
You go first.
I was just going to say, we're talking about all these authors, and you're a big reader. Do you ever want to write a book of your own?
You guys don't want me to do that.
Okay. You know what? Screw my question, Rich.
There's a reason I'm probably the worst Dungeons & Dragons player ever. Because I can't make up a story for nothing. And I said, I always felt like if I did try to do that, it would just be me just like ripping off Tolkien and Frank Herbert, Lord of the Dunes or something.
Oh, so basically real time, right?
Full on rip off. And I know some people, Brian Herbert, have made a career out of that. That's not my style. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to rip off someone's story and make fan fiction out of it. But it's not that I don't feel like I have any creativity. I just feel like my talents, that isn't it. That isn't where it would be. And I feel like I feel like the only booktuber out there who's not trying to launch their own book, you know, and I'm not criticizing those who do. If you have the talent, man, go for it. Chase your dreams. I always tell people chase your dreams. It's just, I get that question a ton. I was like, you guys don't want that.
I also don't know how much time you have in your schedule. It doesn't look like there's another gap in that pie chart to add writing into what you have going on. So
why not? I mean, there's still some things I could probably cut out, but you know, I'm just like, making sure,
you know, time with kids.
Road, here's the thing, you guys, if you guys do go down the kids road, you will get those. I don't want to get too serious on anyway, but you will get those moments where you're like, man, I'm missing a lot of these kids' childhood. And I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I wouldn't definitely want to take on another hobby until after, you know, they're in college or something.
Fair. Very fair. Yeah. Rich, do you want to close us off? Question, statement?
Well,
whose copy of Dune is that back there?
Oh, that's mine.
His copy.
I've bought like 5 different copies of Dune.
It's so
I have so many.
Only 5? Those are rookie numbers.
But hey,
that is a beautiful deluxe edition, though. I was like, I have so many different copies of Dune. I was like, I think that one might be even prettier than the Folio Society, which is amazing.
Yeah, I personally like this one more than the Folio Society one. It just the blue
Folio has really good art, but I think that this one and the end pages are just stunning.
Yeah.
Love absolutely.
It. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. What's your question?
No, his question sucks. Whatever it is, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, hey, are you going to be there? Are you going to be at Dragonsteel this coming December? I always got to ask booktubers when they come on.
I would like to, but I mean, just like with Dragon Con, is hey, this is going to sound so elitist, and it's not the way I mean it. It's just at this point in life, I am above sleeping in a tent and standing in lines and maybe getting into a room. If they want to credential me or something like that, sure, I'd love to go. But just as like just one of the peasants, one of the plebs, nah, that's not my style. No, not anymore. Yeah. I did my time at conventions and stuff. I used to work in a video game deal, and I used to go to E3 and all that stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. And I did my time, you know, sleeping on sidewalks and stuff. I'm not just too old now. I just won't stand in line anymore.
Calling us the plebs. I love it.
The plebs.
We'll be there in line, and we'll be thinking about you.
Before it blew up, you know, and it was just like, yeah, no more of this. Where you stand in line for, you know, 2 days, and you might get in.
Oh,
no.
Getcha.
Well, hey, that's the nice thing about picking books as specifically fantasy books as our genre. Like, Brandon Sanderson is our, you know, our Comic-Con. And as big as that is, it's not going to be absolutely insane. It's going to be crazy for us, but it's not going to be trying to get into E3 or, you know.
When is that? It's in June?
December.
Oh, December. Okay. I say June, we're going to be in another country and we're going on our family vacation. But,
country? No. Yeah. Where are you going?
We're doing Mexico and Honduras this year.
Very cool.
Very good.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. You were in Panama. I mean, not same country, but you were in Central America.
Loved Panama.
Yeah. Very cool.
It was great.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Mike, do you want to close us with anything else? Promote anything? If not promote, leave the viewer with a thought to leave them with and something.
Oh, I got a video on Faithful and the Fallen coming out tomorrow. Hope you guys will check it out. So why you should read on the Faithful and the Fallen. It's one that I haven't talked about before, really, just because I knew it was hard for me to actually make that video in less than like a half hour because there's so much to talk about with that series. It's just like a series I feel like is just – the arrow just keeps pointing up for it on its legacy. I just redid my top 10 fantasy series. You know, I do that like every other year or so if mm-hmm. I feel like I've got enough of a change. And that one's kind of stuck in the same spot both times. So I feel like now I'm already starting to rethink that because it's really good. But I don't know about you guys. With me, it's like just basic reviews. That generates so little interest now. And I'm trying to find a way to make reviews, you know, enjoyable for viewers to check them out. But it's like a double-edged sword. It's like people don't want spoilers, you know, so they won't watch it. And if you do it like I do and you don't do spoilers, like, well, you didn't tell me anything. So it's like there's no way to please everybody with things like that. What I tell myself is, you know, reviews are evergreen. People can always go back to them and find them. I got more of a chance of someone watching my Shogun review 2 years from now than I do my February TBR. You know?
Right.
So
right.
It's longevity over, you know, instant gratification. But, you know, it's just, I never want to be afraid to try new things. But, and I also want to give people what they want. But it's rough as a content creator when they tell you they want this and then no one watches it, you know, after you've spent like 6 hours making a 3-minute reading introduction, you know. So.
Mike, not to loop us back around, but the viewers want you to read ACOTAR, and so do we. So I think that's you're asking. You got to
get in touch with my wife, convince her to do it, and then I won't have an excuse anymore. But she did say, because I actually it was like a couple years back, they were having a Kindle sale, and they had the entire Throne of Glass series for like $1. And I was like, okay, great, I'll get that for her. And then she was like, I don't want that trash.
Oh, man.
So, and the thing is like, it's sitting on my Kindle. So everyone's like, oh, sure, it's for your wife, buddy. You know, but she actually said she'd be way more interested in ACOTAR than she would Throne of Glass. So I was like, hey, just tell me when. So, you know, there you go. If you guys want a cheat code there, at least I'll have your content to go back to and laugh at. So
there you go. That, because you were mentioning doing different reviews, that was the first style we just threw our usual formula.
Apparently, people really loved specifically the format of it, because we did it in a completely different style than we normally do a review of.
Yeah.
And that was such a fun, unique way to do it, of basically splitting it into first half of you just trying to explain the plot to me, and I haven't read the book yet. Yeah. And then the second half is more traditional, us actually analyzing it after I've read it.
Yeah.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun to break the monotony if you have a format. Like, I'm very much a stickler about stay on your format that you always have and stuff. So that's why I like to have, you know, talk about nothing, starting at nights, or collaborate with an author or something, just so I can feel like I'm breaking out of the, you know, the usual blueprint I set for myself. Because I, like you guys, I like to ramble, you know. I podcasted first and I never have a problem talking, you know. So hopefully I haven't talked over you guys the whole time. I apologize if I have.
This is why we have you on.
Are you kidding? The only time you did was when you're shouting down why Red Rising is great to Rich. And I respect that so much.
Well, the way so I look much. At it is that my Red Rising opinions aren't actually opinions. They're facts.
Oh, my God. So biased. Just best guest we've ever had.
The reason
this is amazing.
Austin's loving you right now because you're taking my attitude but putting it to his thing, and it cuts deep.
It does, doesn't it? Because I don't have that spunk that you and Mike have, and then he's speaking for me. Thank you. Yes. Okay.
Hey, well, you know, you'll be happy to know I did have Wheel of Time above Faithful and the Fallen in my top 10 fantasy series ever.
He can give us both
mad.
A win.
Wheelies weren't mad where I had it placed. They were mad at every series I had after it. Above it. You know, that's what they were mad about.
Oh,
so,
man.
You know, hey, it's all good, though.
Mike, thank you so much for coming on. This was an absolute blast. Just everybody go subscribe to Mike's Book Reviews, unless the channel name changes in the future. But Mike's Book Reviews, awesome having you on.
I was watching a documentary on the Foo Fighters, and Dave Grohl was like, I wouldn't change anything. And starts rolling the credits, and it comes back and says, except the name. I hate that fucking name. No, but hey, for real, thank you so much for asking. Like I said, I got kind of jealous, you know, when I see all these other people on here and ain't been on here yet. So thank you so much. So many people are like afraid to ask me, apparently, to come on the channel. I don't know why. I'm just a guy with Wi-Fi. I'd love to come on the channel. I'd love to. So thanks a ton. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye, everyone. Bye-bye.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.